Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Welcome to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about the arts and culture in Central Ohio. And we have three megastars with us in the studio to discuss everything that's going on. And later on, we'll want to take your phone calls as well for Nanette Macy-Junes, who is the executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art, Peggy Kriya Dai, who is a very fine soprano, and when she's not singing, she is the general manager of Opera Columbus. Actually, she does both all the time, and she has two kids, so she's really very busy. And Steve Geyer is the impresario of Shadowbox. And all three people work together and separately, and we're going to talk about collaborations and all kinds of exciting news. And then we will welcome your phone calls. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org if you want to join the conversation. Nanette Macy-Junes, you look the picture of health, wide awake, even though you had a busy night last night. Discuss.
We did have a busy night. We had our groundbreaking for our new wing last night, and simultaneously we opened the George Bellows exhibition. So we had 770,000 people, we think. That's our guesstimate at this point. It was an incredible crowd. 770,000. So 770 people.
Okay.
If I had 770,000 people, that would be incredible.
We had just shy
of 800 people. But it was a really great night for us. We just had a great party. We invited Play Polo to come and play polo on the front lawn.
Real ponies.
I was really worried about the rain. If it rained, everything can go inside except for the ponies.
You might have worried about the ponies, too, but I understand it was a big success.
Yeah, I do. And we had Title Boxing came and did boxing for us. So we had we had George Bellows paintings come to life. In fact, Catco provided an actors and actresses that represented the Bellows family. So it was a fantastic time.
Back up a little bit. Talk about the new wing and the reconstruction that's going on over at the museum, which remains one of the most beautiful buildings in Ohio, never mind what's inside, which is fantastic. And then tell us all a little bit more about who George Bellows was.
Okay. Well, this is the third phase of our construction project. We started, actually, there's a little building on the museum property that is actually the original art school building. If you ever wondered what Baton Hall is, people talk about Baton Hall, this little Italianate building. It's actually the first art school building. And we renovated that building for our offices, and then we moved over and renovated the historic 1931 building, which is that's the beautiful Beaux-Arts building that faces Broad. And then we put in the little West Garden, and now we're building this great new wing that'll run up the east side of the building. It's where the old garden used to be. There will be a new second garden, major sculpture garden, on the north side of the building. The new wing will give us a new entry, a light-filled atrium to come into. It has new space for exhibitions. And in fact, when we're done in the fall of 2015, we're open through all of this. You can come to the museum anytime. We're open through the whole thing. But we will be completely finished in the fall of 2015, and we will open with a Picasso and World War One show that we're during.
We want to get back later and talk about that because that's very exciting. But George Bellows, give us a little précis on George Bellows and his work.
Well, George is the hometown boy.
Right.
He was born and grew up here in Columbus, Ohio. He goes to talk about taking New York by storm. Within 5 years of arriving in New York, he paints Stag at Sharkey's, which is an iconic American painting. It's been on an American stamp. I mean, it is, you know, when you think of George Bellows, you think of these great boxing pictures. There's a lot more to George Bellows. There was a major retrospective. We were the biggest public, actually, we were just the biggest lender. It was organized by the National Gallery in Washington, went to New York, went to the Met, and then went to London. Now, this is a smaller show that the National Gallery helped our curator, Melissa Wolf, develop. So it's sort of an epilogue to this great retrospective so that Columbus can celebrate this great moment in George Bellows' career. He was the theme last night was breaking tradition, breaking ground, because we're building a 21st century art museum for the city of Columbus and the community. And George Bellows was all about breaking new ground in terms of and traditions in terms of art. So it's a great combo.
And how long does the George Bellows exhibit run?
Actually, it goes through early January. So through the holiday season, you can come visit us and see George
Bellows. So you have a chance to see that more than once, because there's a lot probably to take in. And they are very beautiful and they're very dramatic.
Paintings. They are.
They kind of leap off at you. I'm not surprised that you had them reenacted with polo ponies and boxers and things like that. Did you have a boxing ring set up last night?
We set up a boxing ring.
Did you leave it there? I think it would be great therapy for people to come in and slug each other out and then go into the museum.
And I would be very remiss if I didn't mention that Jenny, of Jenny's Ice Cream, Jenny made us an original flavor. She's a huge George Bellows fan. And the ice cream she created was George Bellows Churn and Break. Churn and Break is the name of one of his great seascapes. And so we debuted Churn and Break ice cream last night. So,
and what's the flavor? Describe what it tastes like. And don't tell me you didn't have any.
No, I did. They saved one for me. There's plum that's in it. Ooh. There's sea salt. So it was to really evoke the sea and evoke the foam of the sea. And it was fantastic.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, the Arts, and we're just getting started, and I'm already exhausted in a good way. 292-8513 is the number to call if you would like to join the conversation with Nanette Macy-Junes from the Columbus Museum of Art, Steve Geyer from Shadowbox, and Peggy Kriya Dye from Opera Columbus. And Steve Geyer, I always think of you, and I always think of, for a good time, call Steve. Talk to me about, first of all, reintroduce Shadowbox to us, and tell a bit what's going on.
Shadowbox Live has been growing for the last 24 years, so we've been around for a while now. And during that time, we, I think, have matured from squatters in an abandoned warehouse to, let's call us teenagers, in a wonderful new facility down in the Brewery District. It's a beautiful, beautiful space and has given us the opportunity to do a lot of things that we've only dreamed about for a lot of years. We now produce 19 new shows a year, 535 performances, as well as we have a very active academy where we teach high school students, particularly students that don't have arts programs in their schools. So it's an aggressive thing that we're doing, and I was just mentioning to Nanette and Peggy a little while ago that I tend to be in trouble all the time these days.
Good.
Because I keep coming up with new ideas. They're shutting me down.
What now? When you say original shows, you have a standing company, is that right?
Of
actors,
right.
Writers, directors, musicians, etc.
Yeah, we're actually the largest resident theater company in America.
Really?
We have more ensemble members on full-time payroll than any other theater in the country.
What's a day like when the public isn't there, when you're working on, do you work on several different things at once? You're juggling?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. This week is a great example of that. We have already this week spent countless man hours working on Spamalot, which opens soon, and on Nightmare on Front Street, which opens right after that.
Nightmare on Front Street. Now, yeah. That's intriguing. Tell me about that.
That's the next sketch comedy and rock and roll show that's coming down the line. And as you would guess, it's got lots of movie themes and lots of very silly horror movie details within it, various sketches and songs that all have to do with that general theme.
And speaking of love and romance, Peggy Dye from Opera Columbus is collaborating with Shadowbox again, following up a huge success you had with La Boheme. Can you talk about your next collaboration? Is that public knowledge yet?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Please buy a ticket. We're ready for you.
Never mind.
Yeah. It's The Merry Widow, but it is a very modern, funky version of it. It's cut down to an hour. And it takes place in Columbus.
In Monrovia or wherever that's supposed to be.
Right, no, good. Much more relatable, actually.
Okay.
Very funny. Shadowbox rewrote the libretto, and it is hilarious. Don Fry from your staff did it. He did a fantastic job. It's cast by local singers. It's twice the size, the cast size of La Boheme, so we're going to fill up the bistro. It's great. Very exciting. Very exciting.
The Merry Widow is an operetta by?
By Lehar.
Okay. So, tell me a little bit about it. What tunes should we, because you're the singer,
yes.
What tunes should we listen to? Which
there is one tune called Women, and it's sung by all the men, and I'm sorry, you're going to be joining in at the end if you're sitting there.
Have you rewritten those lyrics?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Not
vibe,
too much.
What, girls. You can't say that today, but I'm just saying you have rewritten them to be timely, I guess. And
oh, it's so clever. Yeah. It is so clever. I was reading the script the first time laughing out loud, so we couldn't even get through the first read through. It's really clever.
And that will be opening when?
That opens on October 26th.
And runs for a while.
Saturdays at 4 o'clock. And Sundays at 5 o'clock. And we have 8 shows, and then we return in January for another 8 shows.
So, and typically, was it free last year?
It is free,
but
you really need reservations.
Yeah.
And if you want prime seating, costs you $10, well worth it. I guarantee it.
By the way, the food is terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, the food and drink is wonderful.
It is a perfect match in the bistro.
Great first date. Well, not a great first date because it's noisy and fun. And, you want an out if it's a first date that's not really working.
It's only an hour.
But it's only an hour, yeah. You can sort of and have your real date afterwards. Come back, bring your real date in January. That's Franz Lehár's operetta, The Merry Widow, which has been refashioned and cut down a bit to be timely for all of us in Central Ohio. The tunes are great, and you always do very well with cast. So I know that's going to be terrific, that show. And that's just the tip of the iceberg for Opera Columbus right now.
It really is.
So we'll get to that as well.
Okay.
I have an email, and I want to read this now and then maybe get into a discussion after the break, because this is a very, very good point. It's from Jill, who writes that her daughter has benefited from Shadowbox Live's collaboration with Metro High School through the STEM Rocks the Box program. Do you have any thoughts about schools like Metro where arts are not part of the curricula? I appreciate that these schools are not trying to be like traditional high schools, but it's a disservice to really bright students to make them choose between STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, math, and the arts. So when we come back from the break, we'll talk a little bit more about all of you. All of you are very busy with outreach and educational programs, and all of you have schools and things like that. So I do want to get into that. But I also want to talk about collaboration, because you two young women have Steve Geyer in common professionally.
Yes.
Professionally.
Be careful there.
Yes. The Columbus Museum of Art and Opera Columbus. And Opera Columbus went away for a while after some financial problems and has been back for the past couple of years, really doing bang-up work, really doing wonderful work with Shadowbox and in the Southern Theater. And Peggy is in charge of... You're back in the production business. You're back presenting opera from the
producing.
Local
community.
Producing, yes, for the local community, yes. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We're going to take a break right now. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away. We'll be back in 60 seconds with more of All Sides Weekend, The Arts. Thank you, Rachel Quimby. We are back with Nanette Macy-Junes, the Executive Director of the Columbus Museum of Art. Peggy Creadai is the General Manager of Opera Columbus, and Steve Geyer is the boss of Shadowbox. And we had left off with a question about education. You all have very active education and outreach programs. Our Jill wanted to know more about working with the students in the STEM schools and how they sometimes have to choose between working in these very fine science technology schools and working in the arts. And I know you, Steve, have already mentioned that your program sometimes picks up what the schools can't do in terms of the arts. But how about that question that from Jill? Talk a bit about that.
You know, I completely understand the issue for a parent. You know, you want your child to have the most rounded experience they could possibly have, and arts are critical to that process. They're not just a good idea. But on the other side of the coin, I get where schools are coming from. They want to capture as much time as they possibly can for the educational side of what they do, the STEM side of what they do, and there's limited financial resources. And with that limit, they're asking other people in the community to get engaged. And that's actually how we got started. Our very first educational project was with the Metro STEM School. And it was the result of us being aware we wanted to do something and the community at large reaching out to us, specifically through Battelle, and saying, hey, we'd like to see if Shadowbox would get engaged with our students.
I would think music would fit that very well, Peggy Dye, because music is math when you think about it. I mean, I don't want to scare people, but let's face it. You know, if you can't count, you're really going to have a hard time being a musician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. Actually, Steve and I have a program that's going to the high school, too. The Merry Widow has been cut down to 45 minutes and will be traveled to the high school as well.
So you're going to go to them?
We will go to them.
I guess because it's a bar. You can't.
Yeah.
We're going to recreate that in every school.
That's terrific. That's really ambiance. Let me ask you two, Nanette and Peggy, when you fashion, when a school comes to you, mm-hmm. do you have to specialize, really focus what you do in specific schools, or are you doing education programs that really are a good fit everywhere?
Well, we do specific age groups. So we target specific ages. And customize a program for that age group so they can get the most out of what we have to offer. You know, I do want to just plug this year for the first time, we are having a collaboration with Ohio State University. And we have a class that I'll be going in to teach that will cast one of our school shows that will travel. So actually, I hear the students today and tomorrow. I audition them for that class. So
that's fantastic. Exciting. That's really great. That makes a lot of sense. That's great. And then that, how about?
Well, I was going back to that email, which I think is a great question.
I
agree that resources are always, by definition, a limited commodity. I think this is a faux choice that we are promoting here. I think that, you know, I think what we really need to focus on is critical thinking skills with our young people. What we need to produce in our next generation of people on the planet is people that think better, who can problem solve, who can think out of the box. And we seem to forget that that is not the sole purview of science and technology. The arts play an incredible part in getting people to be able to think out of the box. That's what artists do. It's what musicians do. It's what actors do. It's what, you know, composers do. We need to embrace that and realize, and that's what the museum is doing. And like Peggy, we do a lot with crafting our programs around certain age groups. And I think you realize that one of the reasons that the museum, in case you were living under a rock and didn't know that we got the National Medal from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, one of the reasons we were given that award, it wasn't about great exhibitions or great collections. It was about transformational work in a community. It's about how can we all work together to change what's possible with the people, with the next generation, and how do you think like an artist and make it better? So I just think it's a faux choice, and that for me is the what stands out.
I will say that I've been doing this program for 5 years, and in those 5 years, the paradigm about collaboration has changed dramatically. It didn't exist we wouldn't have had this conversation like this 5 years ago. And now every arts program includes a big segment of what you all are doing together for the population. So the population is less segmented, and you all get, you know, some profile and some recognition, and people benefit from what you are offering. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend for the Arts with Peggy Kriadai from Opera Columbus, Nanette Macy-Junes from the Columbus Museum of Art, and Steve Geyer from Shadowbox. Please give us a ring, 292-8513. That's a 614 number. And join the conversation. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. And we have Ed from Baltimore on the phone talking about competing. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I hope you can hear me. I seem to have a little bit of a bad cell or static. My question is, the collaboration issue kind of got me to thinking, and I wondered, looking at the different types of cultural organizations that are out there and what comes through town, does something like Cirque du Soleil help or hinder, or is it a trade-off? I mean, does it help by bringing somebody who might not otherwise think about performance art or things like that to you, or does it take dollars out of the system that would otherwise come to you? And I'll listen off the air.
Thank you, Ed, for your call. Nanette, you brightened up at that question.
No, I vote that it's great. The reason I vote that it's great is that what we really do know is the more involved people become, the more things they did a study, and I'm going to always forget which study it is, but we know absolutely by evidence and by research that very few people go to one thing. It's not like, I mean, there are a few people who only go to the art museum or only go to Shadowbox. That's very rare. Most people get involved. They start going to more things, and the opportunity to, you know, that afforded by bringing great national, international acts that are not based in one of our organizations is still a great thing for all of us. It gets people engaged.
More is better. Less is not more. More is more. More is better.
I bet if you go to Cirque du Soleil, you're a little less scared of Steve over at Shadowbox.
Well, I'll make the point, too, that it was Peggy at Opera Columbus that brought me to Shadowbox for the first time, and I've been back several times since, so because I was hooked on what you did there. It's a great show. It's a great evening, and my family always has a good time at Shadowbox, and we pay. So,
and thank you for that. Yes, you know, and I completely agree. I think that there's this basic issue that if you can get a potential consumer, a patron, off the couch and turn off that TV or the computer for a while, that you will eventually convince them that there's an awful lot that they ought to experience beyond the television and computer. And Cirque does a fabulous job of that. I mean, they've got such incredible name recognition. Everybody knows it's going to be a great show. So you go and you see it and you think, you know what? This was awfully fun. Let's do something else tomorrow night or whatever.
But there's no real comparison between looking at a piece of art that's 3 feet in front of your naked eye and watching a video or something, or seeing an opera on TV or seeing it live. There's not a lot of comparison. They're two different art forms. In my opinion, the mechanical reproduction and the live deal. They're both wonderful, but the live deal is always.
It's totally true. I mean, you know, let's be honest. I'm grateful because I don't always get to see Cirque du Soleil when they come or something, but it isn't the same as seeing it on a screen. It just isn't. It's not a thing. And I think the really smart thing about Columbus, Ohio, is that people realize it's a balancing act, and that we would. But you know what? We'd be a much poorer community if we just had outsiders coming in and performing for us. It is having artists and musicians and actors and singers living among you, and those people being part of your creative community here, I think makes a difference too, though.
And you are employing our neighbors here, and Opera Columbus certainly is employing our neighbors here now. Peggy Dye, I know what Opera Columbus was, and there was a lot about it that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more about it that's wonderful now. So bring us up to date on the trajectory and where the company is now.
Well, it is rolling really fast. Like, we're going to have a whole nother conversation next year, a whole nother conversation the next year. So this year, the addition will be producing again, which has been long awaited. We're very excited. We're doing Madame Butterfly in November.
When you say producing, what exactly do you mean?
It means that we are choosing the artistic content. So we are bringing in the conductor we wanted, Kostis Protopapas from Tulsa Opera. He's fantastic. Crystal Manich, an emerging director, is coming in. She's fantastic. And a lot of the local cast, we are bringing in two young artists to sing our leads. However, it'll be their role debut. So a part of our mission at Opera Columbus is really letting emerging artists get that shot that they wouldn't get maybe in some of the other companies. So these artists have definitely proved themselves, but it makes for a very exciting performance when they're doing it for the first time.
And you have a young and physically attractive company. I happen to know a few of them. You have a wonderful baritone in Robert Kerr. I don't care. I'm going to plug him anyway.
Please do.
And John Nevergal is going to be in your show,
yes,
as Goro. And
that's right.
Tell me about your butterfly, the soprano.
Her name is Preeti Gandhi, and she's Indian.
She's beautiful.
She's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous, yeah.
And she's so sweet. And all of this comes across on stage. She did her audition in the Southern Theater for us. And, I was tears. It was fantastic. She's coming in from San Diego. It's her role debut. She has sung in eight houses throughout the U.S. And
meaning big opera houses.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, sorry. Yes, the top
budget,
opera houses.
Big budget opera houses, yeah.
That's right. So this is her role debut. Her voice is the perfect size for the Southern. It's exactly what you want to hear in that role in that theater.
And that's coming up in the fall, is it?
November 22 and 24.
Right between your runs of The Merry Widow at Shadowbox.
Yes, Shadowbox, Merry Widow runs right up to opening night.
Wow, you're busy. I will tell you, I happen to have seen Marines crying at Madame Butterfly. So
that's right.
That's a great show. And we have a call from Mary in Columbus, wants to talk about teens, specifically with Shadowbox. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Yes, my daughter will be turning 15 in October, so I was looking for something that her and a friend could do to celebrate. I was wondering if that October Shadowbox program is suitable for teenagers.
All right, we'll take that off the air. Thank you for that question. Go ahead.
Yeah, Shadowbox programs, I think there's a general misconception that everything that we do is 21 and over, and in reality, nothing is 21 and over. It's
because they know more than you do anyway when they're 15 and 14, you know.
That's exactly right. It's entirely what you're comfortable with. It is, we consider most of what we do R-rated, although we do get down to PG from time to time. But that's kind of what you're comfortable with.
I would say our Merry Widows not R-rated, though.
Now, see, that's true. You're absolutely right. That's a good example of
that.
A straight G show.
Yeah, bring her to that because it's great tunes, and she might even know, she knows some of them without knowing she knows them, what it's from. And people will be up dancing, I'm sure, and falling in love with
the
audience.
Well, the story's so fun and silly.
It's fun, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a silly story, and it's a lot of fun. Basically, a rich widow is sort of working the field, and they're working on her so she can save the economy of some struggling country or Columbus.
So,
are we going to have any Columbus notables referenced or appearing in the production?
Do you know we do have
how many football players are you going to have in the show?
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
That's been done. You know, yeah.
I've heard this.
Yeah.
We do have a place for a cameo. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Well, that'll be good too. So, Mary, to answer your question, yes, I think, and I've been there a number of times too, and I'm a parent. And again, A, they know more than you ever did, and B, they're going to have a great time. So that's wonderful. 292-8513 is our number. If you'd like to get in the conversation about the arts in Central Ohio or the arts in Columbus, we have three of the leading lights of that here: Steve Geyer from Shadowbox, Nanette Macy-Junes from the Columbus Museum of Art, and Peggy Kriya Dye from Opera Columbus. 292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org or find us on Facebook or do all three. We're here for you. Nanette Macy-Junes, tell me about somebody's first visit to the Columbus Museum of Art. You walk in the door, you put down your money, and you stand there. Then what?
Oh, no, you don't just stand there.
Oh, okay, I mean.
I was talking to someone on our education team the other day, and they were telling me about, we do a lot of visitor intercept things, interviews now, talking to people and we've got a lot of families that now come in, and there was a little boy, and he was maybe seven, and his mother was with him, and they were down in the Center for Creativity, and they were, maybe it was his grandmother, but anyway, and they had been doing some activities and things, and they started talking, and he turned to his grandmother and he said, or his mother, and said, "We've been here 2 hours already. We haven't even looked it up at a work of art, like a painting yet." He wouldn't have said work of art. He said a painting. And she said, "We did. We were just down the hall." And she goes, "Remember the woman with the green face?" He goes, "Oh, yes. We looked at the painting with the woman with the green face." But people really, the Center of Creativity has really energized our family audience. They're interactive, things to interact with, things to do. Actually, the things to do with throughout the whole building. I think one of the things I want to tell people is, because I've got a lot of people who do want to walk around and talk with a friend or a colleague and just look at art and kind of have that quiet, more meditative experience. That experience is at the museum still. That's the sort of traditional experience. We still got that. You come on an after Wednesday afternoon, after lunch. It's a great time to kind of walk and have a quiet conversation and really, talk about works of art. That's there too. So I think that diversifying the experience so that you can do lots of different things at the museum is what's going to make it be more attractive to people and feel part of your life. That's what we're really trying to do, is get people to feel that we've got a place in your life.
I came in a couple of times of a weekday afternoon when I was downtown probably seeing Peggy for appointments, just because I had an hour between meetings or something. And once you were there, just walking around, the executive director, and you were just chatting people up. I've seen that happen. And I had moved on, but you were very excited about a couple of paintings, and you were basically almost throwing a kid through the canvas.
Sometimes
it was wonderful.
I'm not sure people really want me to stop and talk to them, but I was talking to them about it. We have this wonderful painting. It's a little tiny Dutch picture, 17th century, and it's a man and a woman looking out at you. And so we had this, I stopped these people who were looking at it. I said, "You know what this is really about?" And they said, "No." And I said, "Well, actually, this is right when Protestantism is kind of getting going. And so they're trying to create Protestant painting that looks different from Catholic painting." And they said, "Really?" And I said, "Actually, yes. This painting is all about sex. And it's about, the Virgin, you should be thinking about,
Do not adjust your radio."
And I said, "It's all about this, it's all about the idea of the young woman is alluring. And at the same time, it's to make you think about, oh, life is short. Eternity is long. You should be thinking about your soul." And they're like, Really? So we had this great conversation.
I just thought
it.
She had a green face. I didn't know there was something.
Well, wonderful. You know, we've lost the sort of code book to know how to interpret some of these pictures. So it's fun to have those conversations with people.
And Steve, I think most of your work is original.
Yeah.
What is your process? You guys, you go in for the first day of something. You know, we have to have something new for next week. So, what happens?
Well, generally, if I say we have to have something new for next week, I'm strung up. So I try to give them a little more time than that. The idea being that maybe 6 or 7 months out, depending on the scope of the project, we'll sit down and have a pitch meeting where we talk about, okay, we need a new musical. Throw me some ideas, or we need a new stage two for dance production or comedy for the new sketch comedy show. We'll go through that process where we get pitches and we'll improve some pitches, and then we'll start to get various bits and pieces that they can send back to me for edits. I'll go through that edit process. We end up with, you know, 15, 20 rewrites, quite literally, before we get to the point of saying, okay, now we're ready to do an audition. We start getting people into that process, and then we're off to the races. But it's absolutely all the time. They're always multiple projects going on because there's so many shows we do a year and it takes so long to get them up.
When you create something like that, a new show, an all-original show, when it's performed, does it change performance to performance?
Yes.
Well, that's part of the fun, I would think.
It is part of the fun. And, of course, there are two kinds of change. As any good stage manager on Broadway will tell you, there's changes that make the show a little better, and then there are the other kinds of changes. And so you have to be constantly watching out and making sure that show is improving and not just more fun for the actors.
So you, as the director, you really can't take a night off.
No, I don't have a lot of time off.
We're going to come back. I want to ask Peggy Dye about opera production and about stage direction and the look of things as well. And we're going to take a break right now and come back and welcome more phone calls, more emails, 292-8513 or allsides@wosu.org. As we talk about the arts with Steve Geyer from Shadowbox, Nanette Macy-Junes from the Columbus Museum of Art, and Peggy Kriya Dye from Opera Columbus. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away. That's the voice of Rachel Quimby, who has directed this program for the last several months, and we love her. She's done a fantastic job of keeping it together and added to her other responsibilities here at WOSU Radio, which will continue. Amy Jurevich, our associate producer, is back from maternity leave with a really beautiful baby girl. The baby's not here today, but she had a beautiful baby girl. We've seen the pictures. But Rachel, thank you very much for all of you've done for this program. You're terrific, but you're not going away. That's the best part. So thank you, Rachel. Welcome to Amy. Welcome back, Amy and Josie. And I want to go back to our panel now, and I want to ask Peggy Dye, when people go to an opera, say, it's usually about some king or queen who's going to be murdered, someone's drinking poison, somebody's getting married that they shouldn't be getting married to. It's very seldom about what happened this morning in the town that you're living in. What's the shift toward making it timely or maybe more real for audiences?
Relatable is the word I would use. It needs to be relatable. I don't think when opera was written, it was written for those singers, that audience at that time, for that theater. So I'm very much of that mindset. So if that means things need to be adjusted for the singers or the audience or the house, then so be it. I mean, we're about communicating and moving and changing and whatever we need to do to make that happen, I'm for.
And entertaining as well.
Oh, yeah.
We forget the E word sometimes. You know, we all forget the E word.
It is entertainment. That's right.
You want people to have a good time, even if they are crying because it's a sad opera, and come back, you know. So Madame Butterfly is something that people think they know about. It's the little geisha girl who marries a heel, an American lieutenant who dumps her, and then she commits harakiri. Are we going to look for a different take on that from you?
Some of it is different. Cool. Our director has some really clever ideas. It is not going to be your traditional butterfly in every sense, that's for sure.
Maybe she'll kill him at the end. You know, people would like that. You know.
Yeah, people would like that.
Yeah.
The look is very modern. I wanted to be very careful that it didn't look like the Mikado. I'm not
good for you. Well, not that we don't love the Mikado.
We do, but this is not the Mikado. Right. And the Southern is a very intimate theater. You can see everything. You can see expressions. And the wigs will be different. They'll be very, I mean, you should see the geisha women and think, beautiful. These women are stunning. So the look of their hair will be different. Their makeup will be different. You'll get the same feeling that you're supposed to get when it was written.
That's exactly the point, I think. You want to mirror the experience for this audience that the ones 100 years ago had.
That's right.
And it's harder because the world's changed so much, mm-hmm. and communication has changed so much. We will look forward to Madame Butterfly in November at the Southern Theater from Opera Columbus, an original production from Opera Columbus again. Also, The Merry Widow. And you have a G&S coming?
Gilbert we do. Sullivan? We're doing Pirates.
Pirates of Penzance. Okay.
And then we have a collaboration with the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. We're doing a semi-staged Carmen in the Ohio in May.
I might be in that, by the way. You don't know that yet, but yes, I'm not going to sing though. God forbid. We have a call from Jeff in Columbus who wants to talk about the museum. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. Go ahead.
That's good to hear. Well, my question is, this is for Peggy. If you have any plans for expansion of the museum.
That's and for Nanette, right? Nanette Macy Jones, right? That's
sorry.
Okay.
My brain is.
That's fine.
Right now.
Well, it's Friday morning.
Are there plans for expansion? Good timely question. Maybe you just tuned
in. Timely.
Go ahead.
So the third and final phase of our construction is coming, and we have a new 50,000 square foot wing that will have a new entry experience, new space for exhibitions, new space for collections. Do you realize that most people don't realize that, you know, the only expansion the museum ever had was in the 1970s wing. And that wing had a lobby and an exhibition hall. It didn't have collection space. So we really haven't expanded the space for the collection since 1931.
How much of the permanent collection would I see if I went in today? What, like 20%?
No. Like most museums, it's a tiny percentage. Yeah. It's well under 10. And I think that it's less about how much stuff you could get out, but then creating a great experience for people. Like the traditional galleries are beautiful, but they don't lend themselves to contemporary art. We have wonderful contemporary art and contemporary art projects. That'll help us. We have a wonderful pre-Columbian collection. We have wonderful Asian and African art. So to be able to grow the kinds of works of art you'll see is really important. But we'll have a great new cafe. We're going to have a great new sculpture garden. We'll have a new shop. I mean, it'll just... We're investing in the infrastructure of the museum so that it creates, you know, greater public value for our community and also helps us raise and earn more of our own way so that we're sustainable for the future. So that's our sort of theme.
And you and Steve Guy are collaborating. The museum and Shadowbox are collaborating. What's that about?
Well, I think I'm going to let Steve describe it. But, you know, when he just mentioned a few minutes ago how long it takes, we've already been working on this project for 8 months and we're not going to debut it till next spring. So, right. Steve.
Yeah, well, the concept is essentially kind of a knockoff of Pictures at an Exhibition. We're looking at 22 pieces from their permanent collection and have written a rock symphony to accompany the work.
Original music. Did you write it?
With a team of other writers at Shadowbox. And we are also doing extremely high definition video and still photography, and that will be used to inform the viewer as we're performing the music. It also gives us an opportunity to add a lot of details. You know, Nanette was talking a little while ago about how much more the art means when you know what's behind it. Well, we had the extraordinary luxury of going through the museum with Dominique.
Oh, Dominique Vasseur, the wonderful, yeah. The wonderful Dominique, one of your curators, and yes. If you want to learn about art and have fun, talk to Dominique, yes.
Yeah, unbelievable experience. I mean, it transformed everything we were seeing. So we were able to select works based on what he was telling us, and we use an awful lot of the knowledge that he provided to provide our viewers a deeper, richer experience. And so that's kind of what we're trying to come out with. At the end of the day, this look at the 22 works, a very in-depth look, while you listen to the music that's been created, and we're creating dance, and some of the music is vocal music, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's a big experience.
Now, will this be housed in the museum, or how's that going to work? Where would I go to have this experience?
At Shadowbox. We're
actually
taking a week off of all of our normal productions.
Does Nanette know that the paintings are going to go to Shadowbox?
We're still working on that.
You never know. But also, I think it's great because it'll have not only a life in when it's first produced and out there, but really a post-life at the museum. I know it's going to, because we will never see these works of art exactly the same way because of what Steve and his team are doing with them. I just think,
like the opera production you were talking about. You're going to experience the same beloved story differently, and it might change your worldview, and I think that's terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That keeps the art fresh. We have an email from Mary Jo. This is directed to the museum, which she loves, and she likes the check. She can drive there quickly. She enjoys the 20th century
American. She's going to ask about parking.
And older impressionist paintings. But currently, with the modern art, she finds that seems a bit cold, the Rothko, et cetera. She assumes there will be fewer resources for acquiring more of the older paintings I love.
No, in fact. Right now, it's the museum, right now, the Bellows, we are getting ready to close that 1970s building. So we're going to live in the beautiful historic building for the next 2 years. Bellows is in that part of the building. So some of your favorites may not be up in the short term, but let me tell you, we have actually, and talk about Dominique. Let's talk about Dominique. He has an incredible eye. We have acquired some extraordinary works with him. He, a few years ago, acquired a work by an artist named von der Hagen. It's the first von der Hagen to be in the United States, 17th century, big Dutch landscape. And we never had one. And I said, why do we need one of these? And he said, well, it's beautiful. I said, I know it's beautiful, but why do we need it? And he said, because of the storyline of Impressionism. He said, this is the kind of picture that Claude Monet, the, papa of Impressionism, loved. This is the kind of picture he looked at, and that gives you impression. That's on the road, the storyline for Impressionism. And that's incredible. And he's also just recently bought a beautiful early neoclassic picture, early 19th century French picture, very very tightly painted. It's a figurative painting. It's an Old Testament subject. We don't have a lot of Old Testament subjects. And he bought it solely because Nanette tells the story endlessly about how much Monet hated academic painting of the 19th century. But of course, we didn't own one. And so I would always point to a Renaissance painting, and Dominique said, no. Stop doing that. That is not what he hated. I said, I know that, but we don't own one. He goes, ah. So we actually do collect in lots of areas, and there's going to be great opportunities for wonderful things coming.
Now, Mary Jo, that was a very great question. I want you, when you go back to the museum, you go to the desk and say, I want to see Dominique. Get him out here. Let him take you through the collection, because he's really wonderful. He's great.
But it's about the stories. Yeah. It's about the storylines and how those stories connect to the world that we now live in and to your own lives.
So you're telling the same story a different way, which is what opera does, and what Chatterbox is creating new stories as well. So that's a collaboration with the two of you, and The Merry Widow is the collaboration with Chatterbox and Opera Columbus. How did the idea for the La Boheme last year come about? Because that was the first time, and it was a huge success. And how long did it take to get that up and running?
Well, the true genesis of that was Bill Connor. Bill was in London. I think he was pub crawling, to be fair. And he came across a production of La Boheme in a bar and thought to himself, this is interesting. And it just kind of festered there in the back of his mind. But then as things were changing for the fortunes of Opera Columbus, he and I were talking together at a CCLC meeting. And he happened to say, I sure wish there was something I could do with you guys. I said, well, I'm open to anything. And then I think that memory just was triggered. And he thought, well, why don't we see if we could do La Boheme? Okay. And I think that actually occurred before Peggy was even in the picture.
Yeah, but you cast it, didn't you?
Well, once Peggy got involved, that's when it happened.
Right.
I mean, nothing was
going
to happen before somebody, and she was the perfect pick.
I have to say, Bill Connor, if you're listening, A, you owe me a baseball cap, a Red Sox baseball cap. But B, you hired an artist to run the company, which is terrific, because that makes an enormous amount of difference. When you've stood on the other side of the stage and done the work yourself, you know what it takes to get a great show up there. So, and that's not typical, really, of the opera world, that the performing artist is now signing the contract. So kudos to you. And what was the rehearsal process like for the singers of The Merry Widow who may not have worked in this context before, Peggy?
For Boheme?
Boheme and Merry Widow.
And
yes.
Widow.
Yeah.
Well, Steve works from a script, which typically a director works from the score. So that was, And actually, this is, it seems to me, becoming more and more the trend in opera, which is fabulous. We've got people focused on the music, the conductors focused on the music. Not that it's ignored by the director, but it's the story the director's trying to tell.
Right.
So that was the complete focus in the staging rehearsals. And a lot of these young singers had never experienced that before. It's not going to be the last time they experience it because, like I said, it's the trend.
Right.
So,
well, I think also, as you said, the music will take care of itself if it's Mozart or it's Puccini or Lehar, if it's well done. But you do need a little help telling the story so audiences who don't go to the opera get it right away.
Yes, and opera singers, there's a lot more than just singing the notes, even though that tends to be, you know, that's extremely challenging in and of itself. But there's a lot more to do for your job.
The stereotype of the fat lady with the horns never existed, but it certainly never, there's no truth to that whatsoever. It's just sort of a lazy, fun way to talk about opera. But it certainly doesn't exist now because your singers are all age appropriate for their parts, and they look like who they're supposed to be.
As they were cast originally, quite honestly.
Yeah.
If this is a new phenomenon, you know, this is, or actually it's now, it's old, but things are very visual now. It matters how you look as an entertainer, even if you're an opera singer.
Yeah, you and I have both been in the theater, I'm sure, where Madame Butterfly in the first act is asked her age, and she says she's 15, and I've heard audiences get just
I know.
Laugh.
It's horrible.
yeah.
Why did he write that
anyway?
Yeah,
so, Preeti Gandhi is not 15, but she's not 40 either.
That's right.
And she's beautiful.
That's
so
right.
That'll be terrific. New chapter for Opera Columbus. A lot of work going on with their new building, a new chapter for the Columbus Museum of Art. And Shadowbox, talk to me more about your venue in the Brewery District.
Well,
because I didn't know it was a restaurant as well. Are you running the whole thing? Are you a restaurateur as well as an impresario?
Yes.
Okay.
In a word.
Shut up and let you speak. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we learned a long time ago. I was very, very lucky. The co-founder of Shadowbox, Rebecca Gentile, was adamant early on saying, look, if we're going to do this, we need to have a complete experience. And a complete experience means that you can come and have something to eat and drink when you're at the theater. And so we started experimenting with that early on, and it grew into a very important part of our business. And then once we got downtown into the Brewery District and had a restaurant space, where, as opposed to the East End experience where you were standing between the bathroom and Foot Locker, we were able to provide a really interesting pre-show experience or post-show experience in addition to what happens inside the theater. So it allowed us to kind of expand on that. And you know, I'm one of those guys that believes if you love any aspect of art, you probably love every aspect of art, and cooking is as much an art as anything. And I do love to cook, and a lot of the people that work for me do too. So we actually do the cooking, and we come up with the recipes. It's all in-house.
It's beautiful,
yeah. I'd love the experience. I really do.
And, you know, if you go to the opera in Europe, as you know, because you've sung opera in Europe, the audience will sometimes either sing along or yell at you about stuff like that. Do it again or something like that.
Right.
Do you have that at Shadowbox? Do you have sort of unexpected audience participation?
Yes.
The shows are,
yes, absolutely. You know, there are fewer rules at Shadowbox than there are in traditional theaters, no matter what show we're doing. And every audience kind of defines for itself what the experience is going to be like. But it tends to be a somewhat interactive experience. And I think that's where part of the passion
comes
from.
That's just more fun. And your artists probably are primed to deal with that as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
don't be mean. I mean, don't, you know, drunken stuff like that is not what we're talking about.
No, that's not fun at all.
Yeah, that's right.
But for people who are just engaged, it's a lot of fun.
But I actually saw Madame Butterfly once where someone got up and yelled, "Don't marry him! Don't marry him!" You know, which if she had said no, then we'd be no opera. It'd be curtain come down at 8:30 and we'll go to Shadowbox and have a few drinks and see their show. We have about 3 minutes left. If anybody wants to call or email with comments for our panel, Nanette Macy-June, Steve Geyer, and Peggy Kriya-Dye, 292-8513 or all sides at WOSU.org. We have enough time for each of you to have a minute or so for closing remarks. Peggy Dye, Opera Columbus.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you. I love hearing what you guys have to say. I'm going to the museum is all I can do. You're so enthusiastic.
You want the sex picture.
It was great.
Actually, it's a moral picture, but it's a moral picture.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to see it regardless. Yes, let me just plug our show, producing for the first time, Madame Butterfly, in November. Please come to our website, operacolumbus.org. Come see The Merry Widow at Shadowbox. It's going to be an exciting season, and it's only going to get better, so check us out.
Madame Butterfly will be in the Southern Theater.
That's right.
Pardon me. As as will the Pirates of Penzance in the spring.
That's correct. Right. Carmen's in the Ohio, and yeah. Merry Widow's at Shadowbox.
So you can. It's not a big geographic area to it's not challenging to get there. It's
That's
easy
right.
to get down there and get there. And how about you, Steve Geyer, Shadowbox?
Well, of course, there's lots going on. We've got the Brouhaha coming up in late September, which is our week-long festival of sketch comedy and stand-up comedy from around the country. Lots of troops and comedians coming in from all over the place for 5 days of, or 4 days of sketch comedy and stand-up. And we've got a new dance show coming up in the fall called Madness and Lust, which will be on Wednesday and Thursday nights. It's based on Wuthering Heights.
Oh, here we go. Now we've had the teenagers say, okay,
exactly.
Madness and Lust.
Yeah, based on Wuthering Heights.
Okay, so read the book first in school.
There you go. Yeah, yes, you can, if you can work your way through it, do it. And then we're going to Cleveland in November to do The Mask, which was another ballet that we wrote. Verb Ballet will be doing it up here in the Breen Performing Arts Center.
Terrific. We look forward to all of that. And, of course, the Merry Widow as well and everything. Right. You never know what you're going to get at Shadowbox, but you get a great time every mm-hmm. time. So check it out. And Nanette Macy-June's, your new building, your
yeah,
artwork.
But the big thing I want people to remember is we're open through the whole time.
Yes.
Come and see us. We got George Bellows. In November, we're opening a Matthew Brandt show. He's a very hot young photographer. We're doing the first museum exhibition ever of Matthew's work. He'll come visit us. We're very excited about that. And in December, the Wonder Room, which is the heart of the Center for Creativity, changes out. So there will be a new things to do in the Wonder Room. So
that's the great place to bring the kids, right?
You know what? It's great for every single one of us. In fact, a lot of art students visit the Wonder Room in the evening. They spend a lot of time.
That's what I say on the air. I say members of the station and not members of the station mm-hmm. call this number. So anyway, thank you all for being with us. Peggy Dye, Opera Columbus, Nanette Macy-June, Columbus Museum of Art, Steve Geyer, Shadowbox. I'm Christopher Purdy. Rachel Quimby, we love you. We thank you. You're wonderful. We're glad you're sticking around. Thank you all for listening. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.